Hey, this is Mark Stein, and here's something I don't say very often.
Hail, hail, rock and roll. Deliver me from the days of old. Long live rock and roll. The beat of the drums loud and bold. Rock, rock, rock and roll. Feeling is there, body and soul.
Hail, hail, rock and roll. Deliver me from the days of old. Not me, I like the days of old. As for rock and roll, it's no secret I have a certain antipathy toward it, notwithstanding that the beat of the drums is certainly loud and bold. But a lot of rock songs, for my taste, are of insufficient harmonic interest, melodic interest, lyrical interest, which makes it a bit of a triple strike for me. But I make an exception for Chuck Berry, not for the melodies or the harmonies, but the lyrics are so vivid and so much better than almost any other rocker of the time. He died a few days ago at the age of 90, just a couple of months ahead of the release of his new album. His first album in almost 40 years. I had no idea what was on it, but I'd already reached out to try and get him on my TV show this spring. That would have been my second encounter with the guy, as we'll hear, but that won't happen now. And in its stead, I'd like to tip my hat to Chuck Berry, lyricist. We might as well get this one out of the way first. One of the defining rock and roll anthems, as they say, from 1958, and for the next two decades, almost every aspirant rock and roller did this song. The Beatles, Jimi Hendrix, Judas Priest. It's not just a great primal guitar-driven rocker, but it's the first song about rock and roll stardom. Musically, it's a rock guitarist show-off piece that lyrically is about a rock guitarist becoming a star by showing off. In that sense, Chuck Berry took the spirit of rock and roll and anthropomorphized it.
Well, I was down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans. Well, I could tell I was a money of our queens. They stood a lot of cattle in Birdwood.
There lived a country boy named Johnny B. Good.
Yeah, 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 hello, Sabon. Hey, this Sabon, Sabon.
As you can hear, Johnny B. Good and Johnny B. Universal. That's Chuck Berry's biggest hit, sung by just about everybody except Chuck Berry. He wrote a bunch of sequels to Johnny B. Good, culminating in a 20-minute magnum opus instrumental work called Concerto in B. Good. I always thought someone should turn the song into one of those half-hour cartoons like Frosty the Snowman or Rudolph that turns up on TV every year. Of course, if you are a guitarist, what matters is this. What Billboard magazine calls the rock era is kind of like year zero under Pol Pot in Cambodia. Nothing that came before matters. But here's the opening of another record. 1946, Louis Jordan. Ain't That Just Like a Woman? Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five, and that opening riff was his guitarist, Carl Hogan, 12 years before Chuck Berry opened up the story of Johnny B. Good.
There was Adam, happy as a man could be, to leave got him messing with that old apple tree. Ain't that just like a woman?
Chuck Berry was pushing 30 at the time rock and roll got going, which made him a wee bit too old to be content with asking the stars above why must he be a teenager in love. He knew too much of the pre-rock stuff. He told me, as he told a lot of people over the years, that he wanted to sing like Nat King Cole and swing like Benny Goodman to the lyrics of Louis Jordan. I couldn't honestly say he ever sang like Nat Cole, and he certainly never swung like Goodman, but he did take the lyrical jests of Louis Jordan and set them to some basic but irresistible guitar licks. This couplet sums up an entire era.
Cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go. Riding along in my automobile.
Particular is such a particular word there. If you've been reading me a while, you'll know there's a line of Goethe's I'm very fond of. The poet should address the specific, and if there be anything about him, he will articulate the universal. That's always good advice for poets and songwriters alike. Address the specific, seize the particular. Chuck Berry literally seized the particular in No Particular Place to Go and articulated the universal for 1950s America. Here's what Bruce Springsteen had to say about it.
You know, if you listen to one of his songs, it sounds like somebody's coming in, sitting down in a chair and telling you a story about their aunt or their brother or describing some girl's descriptiveness and his eye for detail, like Nadine, you know. She was standing on a corner. I saw her on a corner. She turned and doubled back, started walking to a coffee-colored Cadillac, you know. It's like, I've never seen a coffee-colored Cadillac, but I know exactly what one looks like.
I saw her from the corner when she turned and doubled back and started walking toward a coffee-colored Cadillac, pushing through the crowd, trying to get to where she's at. Campaign, shouting like a southern diplomat. Nadine, is that you?
If you're a terrific observant lyricist and you can play the guitar just like a ring and a bell, you don't really need tunes.
Up in the morning and out to school, the teacher is teaching the golden rule.
Well, you need maybe one tune.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel.
I met Chuck Berry once a long, long time ago in a very unparticular place. Going nowhere, really. Some hotel room where he was holed up doing a zillion promotional interviews all day long, one after the other. I've been in that situation both as interviewer, which I wouldn't do anymore, and later as interviewee, which I don't like too much either. It's crummy either way doing that. Chuck Berry had a particular way of dealing with it. You'd walk in, he'd size you up, and then he'd say, okay, I'll give you 3 minutes, or maybe 4 minutes, or six, although you'd basically have to be a chick to get up to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes. And he'd actually put a clock on you, and he'd watch the clock. And he did it to my old pal, Craig Charles, the star of the BBC's sitcom Red Dwarf. And if memory serves, he gave Craig, I think it was 2.5 minutes. And Craig made it work for him because when they broadcast it, he added an internal voiceover of his rising panic. Oh no, we're at 1:45 and I haven't asked him about my ding-a-ling yet. I'm not as funny as Craig, so my callow 20-something self just had to saddle up and get to it, asking Chuck Berry somewhat earnest questions, which he politely entertained.
With no particular place to go, riding along in my automobile, I was anxious to tell her the way I feel. So I told her softly and sincere, and she leaned and whispered in my ear, cuddling more and driving slow.
Running along in my automobile bounces along as if you're on the seat of a 1950s sedan.
It sounds like that to you because you first heard that with it, and it's a psychological processing. And I'm not a psychologist, but I do know that it happens because now you declare it sounds just like riding along in an automobile. Only because you've heard it so much and nobody can tell you that that isn't riding along in an automobile. And all sounds like that. You can hear a tune, it reminds you of the words. Right. It's indoctrination from that tune. And a lot of tunes go bad without you even remembering them.
No particular place to go, so we parked way out on the Kokomo.
The night was young and the moon was gold, so we both decided to take a stroll. Can you imagine the way I felt? I couldn't unfasten a safety belt. Riding along in my calaboose, still trying to get her belt loose. All the way home I held a grudge for the safety belt that wouldn't budge. Cruising and playing the radio with no particular place to go.
You say that when you were growing up, you used to write words to other people's songs, verses and things. Your visual lyrics, very visual lyrics, so much more distinctive than a lot of the other rock and roll and rhythm and blues lyrics. What sort of songs did you actually like? Because there don't seem to be any others like yours before yours.
Well, like Ida Reed, Ida Reed, everybody's talking about Ida Reed.
Now, friends, before there's too much been said, let's all dance this old tune called Ida Red. Lighten parlor, farm, the great clock on the mantel, it's getting late. Curtains on the windows, snowy white. The parlor's bleeding on Sunday night. Ida Red, Ida Red, I'm plumb fool about Ida Red.
That was a song that inspired the writing to me of Maybelline. And then at one particular time before I recorded it, I used the Ida Red tune. Well, that's writing the song, the words to other people's songs. When I got up to recording in the studio, they said, you know, you can't use other people's tunes, you can't use other people's words, so you know, stray away from that right quick.
Can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing out to run my V8-4. A Cadillac doing about 95, moves bumper to bumper, rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started back doing the thing you used to do.
I have a sneaking suspicion that Chuck Berry never stopped writing his lyrics to pre-existing tunes. Almost a decade after Maybelline, 1964, he was in federal prison doing time for a violation of the Mann Act, having transported an underage girl across state lines for immoral purposes. And while in his cell, he had an idea for a song, also about crossing state lines, as it happened. So he went to the prison library and got out the atlas and worked out the geography of the song. And having no tune to hand or means of composing one, insofar as he did, he set his story to a pre-existing tune.
From the great Atlantic Ocean to the wide Pacific shore, from the queen of flowing mountains to the south bell by the shore, she's mighty tall and handsome and known quite well by all. She's the combination on the Wabash Cannonball.
That's an old 19th century railroad song, and it was good enough for what Chuck Berry had in mind.
I left my home in Norfolk, Virginia, California, on my mind. Straddle that Greyhound and rode him into Raleigh and on across Carolina. We stopped in Charlotte to bypass Rock Hill. We never was a minute late. We was 90 miles out of Atlanta by sundown, rolling out of Georgia State.
America as the Promised Land, as seen by a guy in federal prison. A few years later, in the 70s, it gave Elvis Presley one of his last really great records.
Get on.
I left
him into rallying on across Carolina. Had more to trouble to turn into a struggle halfway across Alabama. Well, a hound broke down and left us all stranded in downtown Birmingham. Well, right away I bought me a through train ticket right across Mississippi clean. I was on that midnight flyer out of Birmingham smoking in the New Orleans. Somebody help me get out of Louisiana, just help me get to Houston town. Have people there who care a little about me and have all let the poor boy down.
I was interested to see that Chuck Berry was still using the old tunes up to the end. A couple of days after he died, they released a posthumous single from that forthcoming album due out in a couple of months. This is the first new, put that in quotes, new Chuck Berry song in almost 40 years, and it starts with that same old Louis Jordan lick he first heard in his 20s. Back in 1946. The guy who wanted rock and roll to deliver him from the days of old, his message sure depended on a lot of pre-rock tunes. Chuck Berry even managed to breathe new life into one of the hoariest of Tin Pan Alley genres, the telephone song, those sentimental ballads from the end of the 19th century. Hello Central, Give Me Heaven, where the young girl's trying to get the operator to put her through to her dead mother. There was a lot of that about in the early days of the telephone, mawkish ballads. In Chuck Berry's hands, of course, it's not a ballad, it's an insistent rocker. And it's not an orphan girl, but a lonely dad. His chick split, and she took the kid he so misses.
Long distance information, give me Memphis, Tennessee. Help me find the party, trying to get in touch with me. She could not leave her number, but I know who placed the call. 'Cause my uncle took the message and he wrote it on the wall. Help me, information, get in touch with my Marie. She's the only just a half a mile from the Mississippi Bridge.
A prototype divorce song, and from the guy's point of view. That's an unusually sensitive piece of work from Chuck Berry. Most of the time, he operated within a more conventional rock aesthetic. He had great attitude, or more precisely, an ability to articulate that attitude better than anyone. This is just a hell of an idea for a rock and roll song. Roll Over Beethoven. It's got all the cocksure swagger of rock. I mentioned earlier that business about Billboard magazine referring to everything post Bill Haley, Rock Around the Clock, as the rock era, like year zero in Pol Pot's Cambodia. You're resetting the clock. Nothing that came before ever matters. And a lot of early rock and roll thought like that. Rock and roll is here to stay and everything else is dead and gone. Rock and roll is here to stay is a kind of boring way to put it. Roll Over Beethoven, like I said, is a great way to put it, a brilliant way to put it. All the cocksure swagger of rock, but in a goofy, funny, memorable, unmistakable way. And then he drives it home with an absolutely brilliant capper. Roll Over Beethoven and Tell Tchaikovsky the News.
Well, I'm gonna write a little letter, I'm gonna mail it to my local DJ. Yeah, this is a jumping little record I want my jockey to play. Roll over Beethoven, I gotta hear it again today. You know my temperature rising, the jukebox blowing a fuse. My heart beating rhythm and my soul keep a singing the blues. Roll over Beethoven, tell Tchaikovsky the news.
Are the words more important than the music to you in the song?
The message is most important, you know. Words are important, getting the message over here.
How, because I'm always struck by the way your songs have terrific openings, gonna write a little letter, gonna mail it to my local DJ or whatever. Do you always, do they come naturally that way, or is there a lot of editing and tinkering involved in a process?
Oh, yeah, I would say a lot of editing and tinkering, because you sometimes just read it five, six times, maybe one stanza, one verse. But a song is so small compared to, you know, a book, or that you have to get the whole story in one line, you know, where you can use a paragraph in a book. Yeah.
And how do you come across some of these things? Because like with C'est la vie, said the old folks, just goes to show you never can tell. I mean, where did the C'est la vie come from? Because that's what makes it original.
About that time, I think, is when I met a friend in Paris, who was 14, who had already got a fan club up when I first visited. And it's one of the phrases of French that I knew. I just as a Lawanda, I knew a little few phrases in Spanish. And just to broaden the scope of direction of the music, lyrics.
It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, say the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They furnished off an apartment with a two-room Robux sale. The coolerator was crammed with TV dinners and ginger ale. But when Pierre found work, the little money coming worked out well. C'est la vie, say the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell.
I'm not sure I quite believe that story. C'est la vie is an expression. I don't know whether 14-year-old Parisian girls actually say c'est la vie. But no matter, it's a terrific hook for a song. Chuck Berry was rock's prototype singer-songwriter. His singing career more or less came to a halt hit-wise after My Ding-a-Ling in the early 70s. But the songs carried on. And this was a hit for Emmylou Harris at the end of the decade. Chuck Berry looked sharp in that hotel room all those decades ago. Slick hair, black leather jacket. As far as I can tell, he always looked sharp. He toured all over the map, and he never much cared who was behind him. He'd pick up whatever local backing bands happened to be around. So how good a night you had depended on very much the local talent. He didn't want to bear the expense of traveling with a permanent band. So it was just like the kind of pickup band you'd hear on open mic night at some sports bar. And sometimes they were good and sometimes they were bad. But generally speaking, he was always good. And he was on good form in that hotel room however many years ago it was now. At the end of our 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 7 minutes, whatever it was that he'd given me, he said, no, it's okay. You can carry on. So we talked a bit more, but then I asked him if he'd sing something for me. Not a Chuck Berry song, but a number he did at the end of that documentary that Taylor Hackford made about him back in the 80s. The concert's over and he's alone at the end of the night with Johnny Johnson, the longtime pianist for Chuck Berry, who eventually wound up suing him and claiming that he'd written most of the songs. Well, you know, whatever. But back when they were still getting along, at the end of the evening, back in the dressing room, they do an old song from the 1920s, music by Willard Robeson. If you've been following me a long time, you know I love Willard Robeson songs. Guess I'll Go Back Home This Summer is one of my favorites. In this case, it's music by Willard Robeson, words by Larry Conley. And if you're wondering, Larry, who, this is basically the only song he ever wrote that people know. Late 1920s. Sinatra made a great record of it, and Peggy Lee. But I would wager that the version that Chuck Berry loved was Nat King Cole's, made just a year before Johnny B. Goode. But from another world entirely. And this is how Chuck Berry, with the same old electric guitar on which he played Johnny B. Goode, this is how Chuck Berry did it.
Our little dream castle with everything gone. It's lonely and silent, shades are all drawn. And my heart is heavy as I gaze upon a cottage for sale. The lawn we were proud of is glowing in hay. Our little dream garden has withered away. Where you planted roses, the weeds stand to say, cottage for sale. Through every single window, there's empty space. When I reach that window, there's empty space. The keys in the mailbox, the same as before. But no one is waiting for me anymore. The end of my story is told. On the door, a cottage for sale. Oh, it's just a cottage for sale.
I think that's the kind of tune Chuck Berry would have liked to have written. But he didn't know how, and he could play the guitar just like a ring in a bell. So he wrote great lyrics to the only tunes he had, and they were some of rock and roll's best. To go back to that point he made to me about riding along in my automobile, that's the kind of tune, as Sammy Kahn used to say, that a lyricist writes. You've got a lot of words, and you want to get the words in, and when you've got that many words, they dictate a rhythm. And the rhythm kind of sort of dictates 60% of the tune. And pretty much before you know it, you've got something that's serviceable, that's a great story And if you put some great guitar work in there, it's also a great record. And that's what he did. And he did it better than anyone. I enjoyed our meeting all those years ago, and I'm sorry he won't be around to shoot the breeze about the new album later this spring. Roll over, Beethoven. Chuck Berry is headed your way.
A roll over, Beethoven. A roll over, Beethoven. A roll over.